Hey, you. Want access to exclusive secret ops intel? Check out the link in the description.
Welcome to Secret Ops, the podcast uncovering the world of operations one episode at a time. I'm your host, Ariana Caffone, and today we are flipping the script. So about 2 years ago, I became a fractional chief operating officer. And since starting out on my own, I get a lot of people asking me, how did you do that? What exactly is fractional operations? And all those really nitty gritty questions in between. Now, most recently, I had a friend, Casey Proctor, who is a marketing operator, and he had those exact same questions. But he thought, hey, Ariana, I don't want you to just answer them for me. Why don't you answer them for the greater Secret Ops community? After much convincing, Casey will interview me about my experience as a fractional operator. So hopefully, if you're interested in doing that yourself, you'll get some tips and tricks on how to get started.
Well, I think we're both here today because we're ultimately unemployable. And we just, you know, we're just like, you know what? Fine, I've had it. I give up. This is too hard. Everyone can work for me. So we're going to talk about like what it's like to be the boss. To dig into that, I'd love to kind of start from the beginning, not like all the way back to
start, you from know, the very the beginning. A very good place to start.
we're gonna start a new musical.
Yeah, welcome. Secret Ops has become a musical journey moving forward.
We'll be at the downtown theater every Thursday from 4 to 5.
Tickets are free. Actually, we'll pay you.
3 drink minimum. So, would love to understand kind of, where this started for you as a transition point, because you have a corporate history of, having a regular job. And then, what was that kind of transition point? And what was that transition point? And then what led you to, even consider or think about this idea of fractional work?
So I guess let me start. If you are a listener or if you're new, I'm Ariana. I'm the host of this thing. I started Secret Ops because I've been an operator for over a decade for corporations, but for small to medium-sized businesses as well. And in the last 2 years is when I made my shift from working internally in a business to doing my own thing and going fractional. I think fractional just was becoming kind of this like new sexy word that was being used. But essentially, it's like part-time senior work. I'd always kind of felt that little urge inside me that I was like, I kind of want to work for myself. I really want to work for myself. And it's not because I didn't love the teams I worked with, but I have a personality, I think, that thrives in that sort of independent work. And I find a lot of operators, you as well, we really have that sort of inner urge to like run at things and to lead things and to fix things.
Mm-hmm.
It's like that. It's almost like part of our DNA. We can't help ourselves.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. What is your physical reaction when you hear the phrase, that's just how it is here?
Ooh. Like immediately I went from sweaty to angry. Don't know what that says. I also kind of feel the complacency. I get it. Like if you've been in the business for, I talk to people who've been working in their own business for 10 plus years. I meet them at a point they're like, I am so tired and I just can't fix or see the things that need to be fixed. Hopefully, if they're having a conversation with me, they're like, I know this is a problem and I need to do something about it. Being a fractional chief operating officer, the journey is quite interesting, which I'm sure we'll get into more details as it is. But overall, I work for myself, but I am embedded in different teams in a part-time capacity. And I help them look at their operations at a high level. And then I support their team executing at a more lower level. So that's basically what I do. Basically. No big deal.
In a nutshell. When you made this transition, was it like cold? Like, was it a gradual thing? Was it very abrupt? And then following on to that, like, what was the experience like actually getting your first client?
Long story short, I was really burnt out from 2020, 2021, I think as a lot of us were and continue to be. So I needed a break from leading a team. And I sort of said, hey, I'm taking a break. I'm going to go on my own and just sleep and play video games and chill. And I did that for a couple weeks. And then I got itchy and realized that my plan of trying to get hired into a business was not what I wanted to do, that I wanted to do something on my own. So when I decided that, hey, I want to start my own business, I want to consult with operations, I had to figure out how is the best way for me to do that. Now, I've been a COO, a VP of operations, a creative technologist. So at the time, fractional COO just made a lot of sense. But that didn't mean I was going to get hired as a fractional COO out the gate. That was the key.
Therein lies the rub. That's what inquiring minds want to know.
Okay. So the first thing that I had to do was I had to engage the community of people that I had worked with for a decade plus. Essentially, my husband Joey assigned me and he said, you need to talk to someone new every single day. You have to get on a call and just talk to somebody and ask them questions. And that's all you have to do. And I think I ended up having phone calls with like 40 plus people, just picking their brains. I literally just had to get out of myself and into the world, which is kind of the opposite feeling when you're starting something. You kind of want to be insular, make your website. It doesn't help. You have to get out and talk to people. Your network is the strongest way for you to get referrals and to get your first paid gig. So full stop. Like that was where I started. And that's how I got my first client. So how I got my first client was I talked to a friend and I said, hey, I'm on my own now consulting. Do you know of anybody I should talk to? She referred me to someone else. I talked to them and they were like, hey, I think that you should talk to this person as well. They're an operation consultant as well. So like three people removed from the person that I actually knew was how I got my first job. And my first job was developing her website. It wasn't even an operational job. I had a background as a technologist. And she was like, listen, I don't have any operational work right now that I could kind of throw your way, but I know you've got website development, you know, skills. Could you redevelop my website? So I, of course, what did I say? Yes, absolutely. Because what is the next step? Get experience under your belt. It doesn't matter if it's exactly what you want to be doing. I needed money. And so I said yes, and I had the skills. So I said yes. I almost feel like I paid her to do the job. I didn't, but like I got paid pennies on the dollar to do this thing. And that's entirely okay, because what did I learn in the process? How to pitch them, how to write a proposal, how to send an agreement, how to invoice. All of these little pieces of working on your own, I was able to figure out with this person in a very low stakes way. So I'll pause there, because I think network plus just getting in the door, those are the first two steps that you have to do.
You dropped a lot of really helpful points in there about, you know, what you learned in getting that first client. And I think that's what a lot of people miss, because there can be, you know, when you're in between opportunities, aka unemployed, you can feel very desperate, and there can be a very real need. You're like, to have a mentality of, I just need to get money in the door, like whatever 100%. It takes. And so in some ways, an element of that is good, because then, like in your case, you accepted a short-term project that was not an ops at all. But what did you learn from it? You learned, you know, outreach, sales, networking, how to draft a pitch, how to do a proposal, how to get, you know, agreements signed. That is a learning experience that you wouldn't necessarily have gotten if you went back to a regular job. And I also really want to call out that benefit of a very simple metric of talk to one new person a day. Like, I know that was a challenge from your husband, but for, you know, anyone listening or watching this, like, there's, you know, you can get really complicated in terms of like, all right, I've got to, you know, send this many emails and do this many DMs. And like, I've got to, you know, connect to all of this. Like, there's so much busy work that you could do. But then like, if you could boil it down to one thing, it's like, talk to one person a day. Like, that's, it's tangible, it's doable, it's visceral.
If you start to make those new connections, it just helps, I think, rewire your brain to being open to asking questions and listening and learning about people. A lot of those calls were just me asking a ton of questions. I wasn't trying to always get something out of it outside of, I just want to learn about your experience. And that was profound from a human level.
There's, you know, there's a saying about networks where it's like your network is your net worth. I like putting a slight spin on that, where your network is the net that catches you when you need work. And that's why it's so important to be fostering and being engaged in that network. If you have a job, or you have enough clients, it's really easy to not engage with anybody else. And then when you need something, whether that's a referral or a recommendation or a job opportunity or a new client, something like that, and then you come out of nowhere and they're like, oh, Casey, where have you been? Like,
yeah,
like
it doesn't feel authentic.
You're cool, but like, well, I mean, it is authentic. It's vulnerable. We'll put it that way. It's vulnerable.
Vulnerable. That's a great way to put it. I get it too. Like, I was 100% that way in the past, and I try to be better now and engage and stay up to date with people. That is a skill that I had to learn. It didn't naturally come to me.
You got to do the. You got to do the work. We talked a little bit about, we talked a lot about your, you know, the experience of, you know, the transition from a, you know, full-time role and then to your first project freelance type of job that wasn't really aligned with your ideal client. I'd like to talk about like your first like true fractional ops role.
Yeah.
What went well, what didn't go well, like what would you do differently, that type of stuff.
So my first fractional client ended up being 6 months after I started work on my own. And to be real, I had no idea how to pitch myself. I sucked at sales and I sucked at telling people why they should hire me. And I think a lot of people, especially operators, are not good at that. It's not something that naturally comes to us. Whereas on the flip side too, like salespeople might not naturally be good at operations because that doesn't naturally come to them, right? So both parties have to work on both things. But for me, what I had to do was learn, why should I tell people to care about what I do for their business? Ultimately, why do people want to care? Well, they need to save time, save money, earn money, and maybe gain sanity, right? Like all of those things were where I could help and were operators.
Those sound great.
Right. And all of those things are where operators, where we come in and we relieve all of that. So I had to figure out how to convey that in operations terms. The key was when I was pitching this one client, my first fractional client, as many people do, they come to me and they say, I need a task management platform. Can you implement a task management platform? Guess what? They never really need a task management platform, right? That is a symptom of greater problems in the business. They think that giving that visibility will solve the problems, but it won't. It will actually compound the problems. You'll pay money for the platform. People will be annoyed that they have to check a box, and it will honestly just most of the time not work. So I said, listen, talk to me about what you're seeing in your business. What keeps you up at night? And I asked a lot of questions. And out of that, I said, listen, you don't need this. What you need is an operator in the business. I'm now a fractional chief operating officer. I can come into your business and end to end fix what's going on here. And that's how I got it. So I guess to recap, some highlights were get better at selling what you do. Two, people don't care about the details of what you do. They care about the impact of what you can do. You'll see the glaze in their eyes, and that means that you've gone in too deep. You have gone in too granular.
They want outcomes.
Outcomes, 1,000%. They don't want to know, well, what I am going to instill a plan. No, they don't care. When you wake up in 3 months from now, what is your business going to look like, feel like? What will your days feel like? And then you've got to figure out what pricing is competitive for your level of skill set. You can go hourly, you can go retainer, you can go retainer up to a certain amount of hours and then, you know, tack on hours. That's where I also think taking on those initial sort of weird projects can help you determine what works best. For me, the retainer with, you know, an hourly cap in my mind worked best. And then that first client got a big old discount because they were my first fractional client. So they got a bonus from me being my first fractional client, and I got a bonus from them. And we essentially met in the middle there. And I worked with them for maybe 8 months. and was able to instill their entire operational infrastructure in that time. And then it made sense for me to move on.
I'm going to pivot a little bit. How do you determine your, like, what's your process for determining your client load? Like, there's one, you know, one approach of like, I want to make X money, so I'll take all the clients I need until that dollar amount is met. Oh, I'm working 60 hours a week. Oops. You know, obviously that's an indicator that you need to adjust your pricing. You know, like those things are related. I'm curious to understand like how you got there and how you handled determining and figuring out your client load mix as you got started.
Yeah, so once you get over the initial survival stage of working on your own, let's be real. The survival stage is a learning period where you take what you can, you're scrappy, you pitch what you can do, you fall on your face, right? So once you get into a more stable place where maybe you're at the point that you have too many clients or you're just nearing that stage, this is a time to have some self-reflection from a couple of angles. So for me, a big motivation to go on my own was to make my life look the way I wanted it to look. And working full-time for a business in a senior leadership position was not that for me. So I knew that working 60 hours a week was not the thing that I was trying to go for. Even if I loved the money coming in, it was not about that for me. I needed time and I needed space. So I determined initially I wanted to work about 30 hours a week. That was like the sweet spot. And I could go a little higher, I could go a little below, but I wanted to work about 30 hours a week. I then had to figure out, okay, what would get me there and what kind of client work would get me there? For me, I only have two big clients at a time, meaning clients that take up a lot of my week. I only have two of those. The other clients, I find that 4 to 5 is my cap, are more light touch. So for example, what does that look like? So a sweet spot is I have two fractional COO clients I work with. And then I have 2 to 3 advising clients where let's say I was fractional with them for a while. I know their business very well. They don't need me now, nor should they be paying for me, but they want me to stay in the business and help guide them on decision-making. So I still can help them, but they get it. They don't have to pay my rate. And then I also have new clients that I can bring into the fold. That's what's worked for me. I know that you've gone through that recently where it's like you're trying to figure out what client load makes sense for the income I want to earn and also the lifestyle I want to have. And that is going to be unique for each individual. So that's a formula that works for me. It may not work for you. The best suggestion I have is to just try. Try it and iterate until you find the right flow.
And one element I want to call out is that you don't have just one type of client. You've got, you know, true like fractional COO, which is, you know, an executive level of service. And then you have these smaller advisory roles. And what, correct me if I'm wrong, but what that mix allows you to have is flexibility. You know, with a retainer model, you've got recurring monthly income for as long as you retain those clients. And then you've got some ebb and flow and flexibility. So where if one client leaves, you're not going back into survival mode because you have this buffer. I want to dig into a little bit about like the negative side of working for yourself in terms of like, how do you say no to clients and how do you like go about determining whether or not to accept a client if you have an opening? And then the follow-up question is going to be, how do you fire a client?
Oh yeah, those are tough. Okay. So both great questions, both again, lived through experience. So I can only share my experience. At some point when let's say you have more than enough clients that you're talking to, which is again, such a privileged place to be in. Also, if you're good at what you do, if you aren't good, people will not want to refer you. I'll just be honest. If you're like, why isn't this taking? And I'm talking to all these people, it may be a time to reassess like what you're doing with your clients. Maybe you're not giving the right kinds of services, or maybe you're not finding the right times of clients, or maybe you're better internal in a team. Not everybody is great to be on their own and working for themselves. I'll just be real, right? Like you have to have a certain personality to do that. And I think an assertiveness, there's a lot of client management that goes into it. But let's talk about the piece that you said first, which is red flags that I look for with clients. For operations specifically, some people are ready for change and some people are not. If the client I'm talking to is very resistant to me just dropping some ideas of what they could do to change their business, it may not be the right time to work with them. Meaning maybe they are not at a point where they have money or the patience or the want to change. That is okay. It doesn't make them not worth communicating with in the future. It just means that it may not be the right moment in time for them and their business. Again, remember, whoever you're talking to, if they own their own business, they've been through it. That shit is hard. They just might not be ready to hear what you're saying. And that's okay. You can't force a change. They have to be ready to change.
But dig into that and call that out for a moment, because you said something, the not yet. Because just because a client isn't a fit for you right now doesn't mean that they won't be a fit in the future. And maintaining that relationship can lead to either future work with them or a future referral to somebody else.
I know there's a lot I don't know. And you have to remember, you're talking to a human being. And maybe what their goals for their business are different than what you would assume their goals would be. So I always try and lead with kindness. And then I do feel out, am I the right person for you at the time? And if I'm not, here's the thing. You can say, listen, it sounds like you might not be ready for a whole revamp of what I do, but you maybe need help in this one thing. And I have somebody in my community that I think would be really great for you. This goes back into, just because you can't serve them or you might not be the right fit for them, doesn't mean that you might not have somebody else that could be perfect for what they need and their right budget. So I would say the not now or not the right time is a really important component. Another component that I have to be real about, if they're pushing back a lot on your pricing and you know your pricing is reasonable, if they keep trying to bring you down on price, know what you're willing to do and know what you're willing to walk away from and be okay with that. If you say yes to something and you bend too much, you get bitter. And that's not good for them. It's not good for you. And it's ultimately not why you're working for yourself. So those are the two, I say, biggest red flags. We could get down the rabbit hole, but I would keep your eye out for those. And when it comes to pricing, really vet what your pricing is. Make sure you're not underselling yourself and make sure you're not overselling yourself. It's somewhere in between.
Awesome. Love that. I'm curious about ending a relationship with a client, whether that's, you know, in a positive sense because the, you know, project has come to its natural conclusion, or you've helped them grow to the point where they're ready to hire a full-time operator and you're not interested in that. So I'm interested in, like, how do you close and offboard a positive client? And then also, how do you offboard a difficult client that you're essentially firing?
Yes. Okay, so let's talk about the nice offboarding. As a fractional COO, I know my ultimate goal is to set up a more permanent operational person for the business. I am a bridge to hiring someone in the future. Now, that bridge could be a year, it could be 6 months, it could be 5 years. Every business is very different for what they need. But I know ultimately my job is to get in, help, hire, get out. I know that for myself. So I make that very aware at the beginning of the relationship. Listen, my goal here is to make a big amount of impact and to set up your structure in a way that makes sense. And then we can figure out what kind of operational role can take what we built and keep it going. And that's an important piece. They might not need a COO in the future. They might need an operations manager. They might need an operations coordinator, a customer service manager, right? They might not need an operator in the way that I am moving forward. But I start that conversation from the beginning, and I always joke, like, my goal is always to automate myself. Ha 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 ha. But like, really, like, I'm aware that that's where this relationship is going, is like, I'm here to help for a short amount of time, and then we're going to find somebody that to continue building this. So it's not a surprise when it's time, right? But having those conversations is, I think, what being a fractional COO's role is being mature enough to say, it's time for me to leave the party. And then do that in a way that continues to build on the foundation that you've created for them. So that's good parting of ways, right? Let's talk about the bad parting of ways. There are different bad parting of ways. I think one is, let's say you have just like a real nightmare client that isn't like, that's just a nightmare to work with. Guess what? You're talking to a human, even if they drive you absolutely bananas. And just say, I think it's time for me to transition out and we can transition from somebody in. Another thing is sometimes you don't see eye to eye with the leader of that company or the leadership team of that company. And I see that more frequently. As an operator, there's a certain way that I think businesses work well and harmoniously. And if a leader is going rogue and doing things, and as an operator, I'm constantly in a state of whiplash trying to react to those things, I can only pull you off the ledge so many times before it's a pattern of how they're behaving. And in that case, it's a, hey, I think we've got different ways of viewing leadership. I've loved our time together. Again, always leaving positively. It's a human that you're talking to. They're also learning. So if you can end that relationship in a positive light, I would always go that route.
I appreciate that insight. And I think, you know, an additional lesson for folks is if you do the work on the front end of, you know, setting expectations, not compromising your pricing, and, you know, really having a good fit in terms of the service and skills and knowledge that you're bringing to the table, and how well that aligns with where the company is at. If you do that work up front, you will have less of the difficult conversations on the end.
Totally.
And then also emphasizing like the importance of ending well, whether it was a difficult client to work with or someone that you really enjoyed, because you want, like it is in your best interest to have that relationship stay on good terms. You know, no one traveled very far by burning all the bridges.
Also, like, I want to leave you better than I found you. And if I'm not doing that, it doesn't sit right with me as a person. So that's that's my sort of prerogative, is like, I'm going to leave you better than I found you, even if you drive me crazy. I'm going to leave you better than I found you. And then you have to be mature enough to understand when it's time to leave the party.
Absolutely. Speaking of leaving the party, we're about out of time. To close this out, I have a couple real quick fire questions for you.
Love it.
Perhaps unrelated to operations.
We'll see. Great.
What was the last thing you spent under $100 on that you were really excited about?
Last thing I spent under $100. Okay, so this chair, like my back is so thankful for a proper chair to sit in. So this isn't over $100, but worth it.
I love that. What beverage do you start your day with?
Okay, water. But only because I hold my coffee hostage until I have my water, because I know my body needs water, but I want coffee. So that's kind of what I do. I like trick my brain. So I have to drink a whole thing of water before I have my coffee.
Is your coffee like just black coffee, or do you get a bougie drink? Like what's your...
So I love black coffee, but if I want to be bougie, I love an almond milk cortado. So I've made one at home. I know. An almond milk cortado with a little extra almond milk is my favorite. Double there shot.
So we'll end on this question. And this is kind of ops related. It's like, how do you end your day? Because like when you're working with several different clients and you're working from home, there can be a tendency to allow that to overflow into other areas of your life. And so I'm curious, like for you, like how do you end your day to, you know, help with those boundaries?
Okay, so I'm going to talk pre-child, because I think with a baby, you just get a baby thrown at you and you're like, I'm done, right?
Don't drown.
Like you're done, right? So I think that has been an easier hack, because I have an adorable, snuggly, almost 6-month-old that just gets, you know, delicious, and I'm just like snapped out of work mode. But before baby mode, I would say the thing I found is to do something opposite to what I do on a day-to-day basis. For example, I'm on the computer all day long. I'm in technology and platforms and meetings. And so to snap out of it, I have to do something physical, whether that's taking my dog on a walk, Luigi, but most recently it's been crafts. So I've been really into doing mosaic and watercolor. I loved doing pottery on the wheel. So I tend to pick up different crafts, and then I do that at night to switch my brain and get out of my thinking mode and operator mode into my like creativity mode, which also uses the same things just in a different way. Like if you think about mosaics, they're just like puzzles on steroids with glass and scary things. So it's like the same stuff, just in a different capacity that's a little bit more creative, and nobody's going to judge me on how great my mosaic coaster is, right? Like it's just for me to enjoy keep.
We will. We just won't say anything.
Those are things for me that I really enjoy. And again, like switching environments, switching modes, getting physical in something was really important.
That's fantastic. Well, thank you so much for being on my show today. It was really great to talk to you.
Thank you so much for flipping the script. We just scratched the surface today, but Secret Ops listeners, if you are interested in hearing more, let us know. We can always do a part two, part three. Thank you for listening. Please remember to subscribe wherever you find your podcasts, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Hey, listener. Do you want to be a top operator in business and in life? Well, we at Secret Ops are here to help you do just that. Check out our monthly Secret Ops newsletter with exclusive intel just for you. From bonus content to secret resources, we've given you the VIP access. To sign up, check out the link in the description. And as always, thanks for listening.